we want to discuss this evening the Sin of the Golden Calf, which we commemorated yesterday. Yesterday was a Nidche. Yesterday was actually the 18th of Tammuz, and the five calamities that occurred to the Jewish nation on the 17th of Tammuz, which began with the breaking of the Luchos, okay, which was precipitated by the what's known as the Sin of the Golden Calf. And then we go through now a period of known as colloquially the 3 weeks. Then we enter the period known colloquially as the 9 days. And then we get to Erev Tisha B'Av, then we have Tisha B'Av itself. And Tisha B'Av is the day that both Bate Mikdash were destroyed, and which began with the sin, what's known as the Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies, that the Meraglim, the spies, brought back an evil report about the land of Israel, Eretz Yisrael, and the Jewish people reacted negatively to that evil report. They accepted it. They cried the entire night. And Hashem said that since you cried on this night for no good reason, I'm going to make this a, what's called a Bechiyah L'Doiros. This will be a Bechiyah, a night of crying for, I won't say all eternity, but for future generations during periods of difficulty and so on. So this period between Shiva Asar V'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, besides just being known as the 3 weeks and the different strictures that it brings with it, that slowly escalating levels of avelus and mourning and so on, is known in halacha as Yimei Bein HaMitzarim, the days between the straits. And that term is based on a verse in Eicha, where we say, Kol Roit Fea Hisigua Bein HaMitzarim. All those who pursued her reached her, Bein HaMitzarim, between the straits. Which means that this period between Shiva Asar V'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av is a period of time known as between the straits. We're kind of like boxed in, closed in. This is not a great period of time. Now, we understand when we focus on, in the context of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that the Romans broke through the walls on the 17th of Tammuz. And by the way, this was not the day that the Babylonians broke through the walls. That was earlier in Tammuz. I forget the exact date right now. It was the 9th, perhaps. I don't remember exactly the exact date for the Babylonians, but this was actually the 17th of Tammuz, was when the Romans' second Beis HaMikdash broke through the walls. And so in that context, it makes a lot of sense. But if we're looking historically from where it started from, Chet HaEgel, Sin of the Golden Calf, was the event that marked this day as a day of tragedy, the 17th of Tammuz. And Chet HaMeraglim was the event, the calamity that marked Tisha B'Av as a day of tragedy and of bad events and so on. It would seem to indicate there's some connection between the two. Seemingly, there are two distinct mistakes. There's the Chet HaEgel, the Sin of the Golden Calf. And then later you have Chet HaMeraglim, the Sin of the Spies. Seemingly two different averes. What is the connection? So truth be told, Rashi, in his commentary on the Torah, already addresses this question. And Rashi says that when Hashem told the Jewish people that they're going to spend the next 40 years, well, by then it was actually 39 years, the first year already counted, in the desert. So Hashem says, Rashi says, that Hashem had already, says, Ola b'machshava. Ola b'machshava is a term you find in a lot of places. Literally means it already arose in the thoughts of Hashem. You find this term in a number of places. Most famously, when Hashem created the world, it says it was Ola b'machshava. It arose in Hashem's thought to create the world with din, strict justice. And then Hashem saw practically it's not going to work. So he combined it with rachman, with mercy. So the punishment for the Jewish people to spend 40 years sojourning in the desert, wandering in the desert, already occurred by the Chet HaEgel. However, says Rashi, Hashem wanted to wait until Nismala Salsam, which means until the measure was filled up, until they had fulfilled their measure of sin, of evil doing. And at that point, Hashem came down with the full punishment and said, that's it. You're spending 40 years in the desert. So the simple understanding of Rashi is that it's kind of like, you know, the parent who's like, okay, you guys are making trouble. Please calm down. It's the summer. It's that time of year. Okay, there's too much noise. Okay, you guys got into them. Okay, that's it. That's it. All of you, no trip, no Slurpees, go to bed, nothing, you know, whatever. And at that point, the parents just had enough. That's it. One time too many. And so then the parent comes out hard. Except that maybe is a knee-jerk reaction of a parent that a good mechanech will probably tell you is not the best way to parent, even if lots of us present company excluded, tend to parent that way sometimes, especially in the summer when it's like 100 degrees every single day of the entire July. But Hashem does not give knee-jerk reactions. Hashem does not encourage bad parenting. And so why, if that's all it is, what kind of reaction is that? Okay, you guys messed up one time too many. Now I'm going to punish you. It would seem like there's more going on over here. There seems to be some connection between Chet Egel, sin of the golden calf, and the Chet Meraglim, the sin of the spies. So what is that connection? What is the connection between the two, seemingly it's two totally different avers? So I actually have to admit, I didn't get any comments from anyone, but I think 7 or 8 years ago, I gave a class on this very subject. I know a lot, you do remember. Okay, so 7 or 8 years ago, and I actually went back to listen to what I said then, and I actually quoted Rav Moshe Shapiro, and I was looking to find that piece that I worked off of, and I could not find it, for the life of me, the piece that I was working off of. I'm not sure where I found that piece. I'm going to give a different approach tonight. So even if you remember every word I said back then, if not, I could send you the recording from back then. But I'm going to give a different approach. Truth be told, they kind of, you know, dovetail together, but it's coming from a different angle and will hopefully give us a different appreciation. And this approach is really based on pieces from a different piece I saw from Rav Moshe Shapiro, as well as a share heard from Rav Aaron Lopiansky, okay, who often is quoting from Rav Moshe Shapiro. He was a Talmud of his and so on. So different, you know, pieces just putting together to try to create a unified whole over here. So here we go. Let's first analyze the Chet Egel, the sin of the golden calf. We've discussed this in different classes many times. What exactly was the sin of the golden calf? To say that the entirety of the Jewish nation, or the bulk of the Jewish nation, just weeks, 40 days after receiving the Torah at Sinai, fell to a level where they worship an idol is untenable. It's untenable. And truth be told, even in the verses that themselves, it's pretty clear that that's not what happened over here. And in fact, Aaron, when after creating the golden calf, he tells the Jewish people, okay, guys, it's late, it's bedtime. Tomorrow morning we'll party. Tomorrow, Chag Lashem, Mochar, he says. Tomorrow will be a holiday for Hashem. 1 second, I thought, you know, Hashem's out. Golden calf is in. So what do you mean? Here's the golden calf. Okay, guys, we're going to party with Hashem tomorrow with this golden calf. What, 1 second. Which deity are we going for over here? Right? Clearly Hashem was not out of the picture at this point. And so everyone says in some way, shape, or form or another, the idea that the bulk of the Jewish people did not have, strictly speaking, idolatrous intent in worshiping this, to worship this golden calf. Rather, as the verses say, they panicked. They said, Moshe is dead, as far as they knew. The Sutton showed them an image of Moshe being carried on a bier, B-I-E-R, through the heavens. And as far as they knew, Moshe was dead. And they panicked. They said, Moshe is our leader. He's our go-between. He's our intermediary, our intercessor with Hashem. He's not here anymore. What are we going to do? We need some focal point to be able to focus and be able to connect to Hashem. And they created the golden calf. So they weren't actually betraying Hashem in the sense that they were abandoning Hashem and instead going for this golden calf. The Erevah, the insincere converts who had jumped on the bandwagon, very possibly that was their intent. There's a lot of evidence for this in the Psukim. The Rashi already reads between the lines to point this out, that the Erevah were the ones who precipitated the whole thing, and they were the ones with idolatrous intent. But the vast majority of the Jewish people, their intent was merely to create some other focal point to replace Moshe as an intermediary, as a focal point for Hashem. And the truth be told, the Jewish people were not far off, because depending on which opinion you go with, either already commanded or later commanded, when Hashem says, build me a Mishkan, he says, make an ark, and you're going to have two cherubs on top of this ark, and I will speak to you from atop the Aron. So look at that. There's a golden image atop the Aron from where Hashem communicates with Moshe, with the Jewish people. What's the golden calf? A golden image through which Hashem will communicate with the Jewish people. So what's the problem? The problem is Hashem told the Jewish people by Sinai, do not make anything else with me without me telling you to. You do exactly what I tell you to and nothing else. Again, going back to children, you will notice that a lot of my analogies are about children, because I just have so many analogies with my children or Hashem. So, you know, it's very nice when you ask the child to make supper or to do something. But then when the child says, Tati, mommy, look, I made supper tonight. Aren't you surprised? Yes, very. And so what's for supper? Oh, well, look, you know, and as you begin to clean the spatters off the walls and so on. Now, if the child meant well and you never warned the child, but after the sixth time of telling the child, please don't cook anything without my permission, there might be a punishment coming down the line because it's very nice that you're making supper, but not without my permission. It's very nice you do the laundry, but you put bleach into the colors. And that wasn't exactly what I needed. So it's important to follow instructions. And where the Jewish people failed was they made an image as an intermediary between themselves and Hashem, where Hashem had told them, I don't want you to do this. And even though they had the best of intentions, we all know where the best of intentions gets us. And so they were held accountable for an idolatrous type of practice over here, in that they created an image. It wasn't outright idolatry, but it was something of idolatry. If we could boil this down in essence to what went on over here and why the fallout was so sharp and so strong, if they really meant well, okay, what it boils down to is as follows. The Gemara says they lost their crowns of Nasa Venetia because at Sinai, when Hashem said, do you want the Torah? The Jewish people said, Nasa v'nishma. What was that expression? That expression was, Hashem, there is nothing else in the world besides you and what you want. That's it. Nasa v'nishma. We will do, it doesn't even matter what you want us to do, we'll do it. Consider it done. No matter how hard, no matter how difficult, we don't need to hear, we don't need to ask about the details. Nasa will do it. V'nishma, it's done. Now, just tell me what you need done. If we could boil down what the sin of the golden calf was, we could say that they moved away from Nasa v'nishma. They moved away from Nasa v'nishma. Nasa v'nishma is a declaration that there is nothing else besides Hashem. Nothing else doesn't mean there's other stuff, but I'm going to ignore it. No. It means there is nothing else. Something else besides that. If I say, okay, Hashem, I'm really interested in what you have to say, but let me hear the details. Let me see if I can do it. What that means is, Hashem, I'm really interested in this relationship, but there's other stuff I have to deal with. So I'll try to shut out the other stuff and I'll try to push it aside, but I have to deal with other stuff also. Okay? Me coming and saying, all I want is what you want, Hashem, means there's nothing else besides Hashem. And that can be expressed as the first of the Ten Commandments, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Asher Tzichem Yitzchak. I am Hashem, your God, who brought you out of Egypt. That's it. I am Hashem. There's nothing else. There's nothing else. Okay? When the Jewish people go ahead and they make a golden calf, what they're saying is, of course, Hashem, you're it, but we think that we would do well with this image to go between. So Hashem says, so in other words, there's me, but, you know, there's this other stuff also that you're going to reckon with. The Jewish people, by making that golden calf, what they did was they moved away from that exclusive relationship that there's nothing else besides Hashem. Okay? And to take it a step further, this is reflected in the Jewish people. This is reflected in the nature of the Jewish people and the first set of tablets. Because when Moshe brings down the first set of tablets before they're broken, the Torah says that the commandments are choros al haluchos. They are engraved in the luchos. And Chazal say choros also means engraved, also means chayrus, freedom. They were free from death. They were free from being subjugated by the other nations of the world. Okay, in other words, the Jewish people had reached a level of being completely above the travails, the trials, the tribulations of the world, of death, of subjugation, all the vicissitudes and all the challenges of life. That's all behind them. All they had was Torah. And the Ten Commandments are choros, they're engraved in the luchos, is a reflection of the nature of the relationship of the Jewish people with Torah. Because something that's engraved means it's part and parcel of it, right? If you engrave something on a rock, it's part and parcel. If I write words down on a piece of paper, I have a piece of paper, and I have ink on the paper. If that ink gets erased, it fades away over time, it's not there anymore, right? But if I have rock and I engrave the words in the rock, as long as that rock is there, the words are there. It's not going to fade away. It's part and parcel of it. The Jewish people, by Nasa v'nishma, what they did was they fused themselves together with the Torah itself. If anyone's on Zoom who was at my class earlier today, I apologize, you heard this already. I'm just giving that disclaimer. But they fused, they became one with the Torah. The verse that says, regarding the Torah, Ksov zos aluach libecha. Write this upon the luach, the tablet, luach, luchos, right? Same thing, of your heart. We're supposed to put the Torah on our hearts. What was the nature of that relationship at that point? They were part and parcel, they were united. Matan Torah Har Sinai is a marriage between the Jewish people and the Torah, also between Jewish people and Hashem. There's two different things going on over there. That's not our discussion today. That marriage, that oneness, that coming together was achieved with absolute perfection at that moment. Comes along the golden calf, something else. The way the Gemara expresses the golden calf is aluva kala shezinsa tachas chupasa. How shameful is the bride who is unfaithful under her chuppah? She's unfaithful. What was unfaithful? They brought something else into the marriage. They brought this golden calf in, but it's still related. Yeah, but you brought something else in. There's now space between the Jewish people and Hashem. There's now space between the Jewish people and the Torah. There's space. It's not that engraved reality that it's absolutely oneness. The second, two. I know you're waiting for it, but I don't know if I'm going to get there today. It does go back, but I'm not. But you, it's exactly the same thing. But I was going to try to avoid it today. We're going to see. For those who are not familiar, we always go back to Adam. Almost always go back to Adam. Three classes ago, we only went back to Noah. But I think one of the classes we did before Rosh Hashanah,
yeah.
I think we only got back to Noah, not back to Adam.
No.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see. We might get back to Adam yet. We'll see how things go.
That's how you did it the first time. I saw the title. I think you did that.
Okay, we'll see.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so.
Sounds
familiar. After the Jewish people, so before the Jewish people sin with the golden calf, they are absolutely united with Hashem, absolutely united with the Torah. They're free from all the vicissitudes of the world because they're above it. They're not part of it anymore. They're absolutely united with the Torah, with Hashem. They're free from death. They're free from the subjugation of the world. The Torah, they'll never forget the Torah. It's part and parcel of them. It is them. You don't forget yourself, right? If you're not sure who you are, you got a problem. But in general, right? As some famous philosopher said, I think therefore I am my consciousness, my sense of self. If I have to start figuring out whether I exist or not, I've got problems. I'm sure some philosopher will tell me that he has a whole shtickle there on it. But on a very basic level, my knowledge of self is inherent. It's not because I figured it out via some other calculation. Okay? That awareness of Torah is the oneness of the Jewish people. It's the unity of the Jewish people at that point. Until the golden calf, they move away. The second luchos are not engraved. It's written. It's written on top of it. It's an external element written on the stone. It's not engraved. The Jewish people are now subject to death. They are now subject to the subjugation of the nations of the world. In other words, there's a gap. There's a gap. Yes, they can incorporate it. Yes, they can work towards it. Yes, they can get back to that point. Maybe more about that soon. But it's not that reality is not there anymore. So the failure of the Jewish people at this point was moving away from that absolute oneness of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. You know where they are now? They're at commandment number two. Lo yilcha Elohim Acherim al Panai. Hashem says in the second of the Ten Commandments, there shall not be any other gods for you before me. In other words, the second of the Ten Commandments says, there are other powers out there perhaps, but you should not associate with them. But they're there, but don't associate with them. In other words, now you have to reckon with them. Now they will tempt you. Now you will struggle with the other powers, be it a Yetzirah, be it idols, be it other nations, whatever it is. There's a big scary world out there that you have to struggle with. Don't get stuck. Don't get mired in all of that muck of the world. Because Hashem, remember to stay with me. Okay? So that is the sin of the golden calf. So the sin of the golden calf is just merely the Jewish, is the Jewish people moving away from that reality of absolute oneness, absolute perfection with the Torah, with Hashem. They move away from that. Hashem says, fine, but you've still got a world of lo yilcha Elohim acherim al panai. You've still got a world of stay away from everything else. Choose the right path. Don't choose the wrong path. Recognize as Hashem that ultimately everything is me. Despite all the distractions going on over there, despite everything else, make sure you choose the right thing. Okay. Now I will do a brief side trip to Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden because it's becoming the elephant in the room. I have to touch on it. So the story is we've touched on this a million times, but let's just connect it because the connection is so clear and so many talk about it. Okay. Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden had the same challenge. Hashem says, pay no, that Nachash is fake. He's nothing. Don't listen to him. There's nothing else besides me. All you have to do is just stay the course. Don't touch that tree. Don't do anything else. And just stay together with me in that absolute oneness, and we're good. And Adam and Eve say, but there's something else. And Hashem says, no, there's nothing else. Just me and you. And that's it. And they eat from the tree, and what they do is they incorporate other stuff which they now have to struggle with. Death and weeds and childbirth and everything that we struggle with in varying shapes and forms. Now they have to struggle with it. Now they struggle. And that is the sin of eating from the tree. And at this point, now they have to struggle. They have to overcome. They have to move away. They fail miserably, which Adam himself does tshuva for 130 years, but mankind as a whole, for the next while, overall fails miserably. And instead of choosing and trying to get back to that point of connection to Hashem, they instead go in the other direction. They bring so much evil in the world that it eventually just destroys itself in what becomes known as the Mabul. Okay? And that's for a different time. So that is the connection, but you see what's happening over here. Chet Egel, golden calf, is sin of Adam and Eve, sin of the Garden of Eden 2.0. That's exactly what it is. And now the Jewish people have this great opportunity to struggle and to bring back that recognition. There's nothing else besides Hashem. But now it's a struggle. Whereas before you live in a reality where you just have to maintain the status quo, pay no attention to that snake behind the curtain over there. Okay? Or in the case of the Jewish people, to that golden calf. They know that just stay focused on Hashem. Now it's part and parcel of your life. Now you have to struggle with it. Now you actually have to struggle and choose the right way and recognize where Hashem is. Okay? Let's take this idea a step further. This is true for both Adam and Eve, and it's true for the Jewish people, and that is this, that when we struggle with the world, we have this constant struggle that even when we do the right thing, we have this constant struggle to balance the two parts of our life. Because on the one hand, we are constantly striving to recognize that ultimately everything is under Hashem's control. At the same time, Adam and Eve and the Jewish people chose to take a path where they have to struggle. They have to make choices. They have to uncover the goodness and leave behind the bad. What we call in English, bechira, free will, free choice, all the time. So when I make a good choice, when I make a smart choice, I pat myself on the back. Good job, Fleischer, you chose the right thing. But then another voice says, one second, Hashem is in charge of everything. You haughty, no good, good for nothing, big shot that you are. You think you're so great. Everything is from Hashem. So I put in my effort and what? I put in my effort and then Hashem swoops in and makes it happen. Right? So we have this constant struggle in life that on the one hand, we have to put in our fair effort, our ishtablos. But then when our ishtablos and our effort comes through, we have to say, no, it wasn't me, it was Hashem. Now today, people do this all the time. You know, when they get an award, they'll get an award and they think to themselves, I deserve this award. But they'll say verbally, really, it was all my great team and everyone and so on and so forth. But you got to really live it. You have to actually, after you've struggled, after you've put in the work, after you've met success, you have to come back to Hashem and say, okay, Hashem, I put in my effort. Hashem, thank you very much for giving it to me after I put in the effort, because it really wasn't me. And this is the struggle. Now, when the Jews are living in the desert, this struggle really is not a big deal because they're really not doing very much. Hashem is providing for them everything they're doing and so on and so forth. You know where this struggle is going to become very real? Eretz Yisrael. When they go into Eretz Yisrael, they're going to work the land. As Hashem told Adam, you're going to work the land by the sweat of your brow. You shall eat bread and so on and so forth. The area, the point where they're going to have this struggle all the time. Putting in the effort, going to war, struggling, and so on and so forth, and still living with Hashem and recognizing that everything is Hashem, that's going to happen in Eretz Yisrael. Says Rav Moshe Shapiro that he takes this idea a step further. The Torah that the Jewish people lost with the sin of the golden calf, they can reclaim through Eretz Yisrael. Because, think about it, Eretz Yisrael is really the only place to fulfill the Torah properly. On a purely practical level, many, if not most, of the mitzvahs, depending exactly who you hold, like if a lot of the mitzvahs today, like Shemitah and Trumas and Maaseros, are actually on a Torah level today, are they only a rabbinic level? We paskin that most of those mitzvahs, not all of them, are midrabanan today. They're not actually a Torah level mitzvah. Most of the Jewish people are not in the land of Israel today. So most of the mitzvahs we cannot fulfill outside of Eretz Yisrael. Most of the mitzvos can only be fulfilled in the land of Israel. All the mitzvos associated with the Beis HaMikdash, the mitzvah of a king, the mitzvahs of the land, trumas, maishas, etc., etc., etc. All those mitzvahs are in Eretz Yisrael. Furthermore, Rishonim say, the Gemara already says it, Rishonim expand on this idea, that the true effect, impact of a mitzvah is fulfilling it in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban says that even though the Avos, patriarchs, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, we know that they fulfilled the Torah before it was given. Prophetically, they knew what had to be done. Says the Ramban, they only fulfilled it in Eretz Yisrael, not outside of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, because, I'm not getting involved in all the details right now, but basically, the impact of their mitzvah fulfillment at that point in history was only relevant in Eretz Yisrael. Ramban says that's how Yaakov can marry two sisters, which the Torah forbids. It's only forbidden to a Jew, not to a Gentile. They only kept the Torah in Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov married two sisters outside of Eretz Yisrael, and guess who died before he got into Eretz Yisrael? Rachel died. And the Ramban says she died as soon as he got into Eretz Yisrael because he couldn't be married to two sisters anymore. So divine providence, Hashem providentially took care of that. Okay? Says Rav Moshe Shapiro, Eretz Yisrael is the point, is the place where through the land you can reconnect to the Torah and make it part and parcel of your life. If you are living in Eretz Yisrael and you're living that life of Torah through Eretz Yisrael, you reconnect. And think about it for a minute. Where's the apex of Eretz Yisrael? Yerushalayim. Where's the apex of Yerushalayim? Har Bayis, Beis HaMikdash. Let's keep moving in. Azara, Kodesh Kadashim. What's the apex in the Kodesh Kadashim? The Aron, the Kruvim. What's inside the Aron? The Luchas and the Torah. Bang. So when we talk about what we call in Yiddish, the Spitz, the peak, the apex, the zenith, any other synonyms that pop up in your mind, please say them now, of Eretz Yisrael, that is Torah. That's where it is. Because Eretz Yisrael is not just, the point of having Eretz Yisrael is not just to gallivant about the land, singing songs about how wonderful the land is, and you can plant stuff, and singing this land is mine, and so on and so forth. The point of Eretz Yisrael is that you fulfill the Torah in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not to get into politics or anything like that, but there's a line in a certain famous Hebrew song that says "Liot am chafshi be'artzenu," and "Liot am chafshi," which a lot of people have a problem with, because it means to be a free nation in our land. And one of the more religious Zionistically inclined rabbis who subscribed to that to the anthem, he changed it to "Liot am kadosh." Be'artzenu. Now, something tells me the Briskers and the Neturei Karta and Mesh Arim didn't go for that one either. Okay, but the point being that this individual who did subscribe to that worldview, he was making a point. It's not to be a free nation; it's to be a holy nation in our land. Okay, again, I'm not to get political over here, anything of that sort, but just to bring up that point. That the point of Eretz Yisrael is to reconnect to the Torah on that level. Okay, but the challenge is that in a sense you're living a normal life. You're putting in your effort. You've got to see Hashem and pull Hashem out through that. Okay? So the opportunity for the Jewish people to reclaim that level of oneness with Torah and with Hashem is through Eretz Yisrael. If they can succeed in seeing the Hashem side of things and not getting stuck in the me, Hishtadlus, my world side of things when they go in. Well, Let's examine now. So now we understand this is the opportunity to rectify the sin of the golden calf. Okay? And so Moshe comes to Hashem and says, Hashem, the Jewish people want to send spies into the land of Eretz Yisrael, into the land of Canaan to spy out. Hashem says, as Rashi describes, this is not a great idea. Why is Hashem not like this is a great idea? Well, let's think about it. If you are looking at Eretz Yisrael as purely the Hashem side of things, Hashem said, I'm taking care of it. Finished. Marching. Everything is taken care of. The Jewish people are struggling with this balance. Eretz Yisrael is about my effort and it's about Hashem. So don't have to put in my effort. Gotta send spies. Hashem says, if that's how you feel, then that's your struggle. So the Hashem says, Shlach lecha. Says Rashi, Shlach lecha l'daitcha. L'daitcha literally means with your own mind. Okay, says Rabbi Lopiansky, amazing, to extract this thought from the Rashi. He says, L'daitcha means this is up to you because you're at the level it used to be once upon a time pre-golden calf. Everything was me, Hashem, and I provided for you and you totally negated yourself to me, but you're not in that world anymore. You're in a world of you. You have to figure this out. Shlach l'cha l'daitcha. You've got to figure this out for yourself. You're the one who has to struggle in this. Shlach l'cha l'daitcha You have to use your das and your mind to struggle with this and figure it out and see what you're going to see. And I'm warning you, it's a slippery slope. Be very careful, says Hashem. And they send the 10 spies. And what happens? 10 of them come back and say truth. They don't lie. Everything they say is true. There were giants. There's giant fruit. People were dying like flies. They were dying like flies. We were like grasshoppers. They were like grass. Everything is true. Every word is true. And Kalev and Yeshua come back and say, no, it's not what's happening over here. We can do it. We can conquer. Hashem will lead us. Hashem will take care of it. Says Rashi over there that when Kalev stands up and he says to the Jewish people, all you have to do is trust in Hashem and he'll take care of it. Says Kalev that if we have to build ladders to the heavens, we will succeed. Okay. Why ladders to the heavens? Why ladders? Why not just throw wings and fly to the heavens? Why ladders? You can as easily fly to the heavens as you could build a ladder to heaven. If you build a ladder, if you suddenly sprout wings and fly, that means it's a total gift. There's no effort on your part. You just float up. A ladder means I'm putting in my effort. If you have to build a ladder, meaning you have to do your part, and you're going to say, but we can't do it. I can't build a ladder to heaven. Says Kalev, you're focusing too much on your side of things. You have to do your part. Build the ladder. How will I get to heaven on a ladder? I don't know. Hashem will figure it out. Right? This is, it's the point Rabbi Lopiansky makes. You've got to build your ladder. How am I getting a ladder to the heaven? I have no idea. But you've got to do your part. As famous Bali Moshe say in Yiddish again, medaf ton nish oifton. That means, in French, it means you have to do. Your obligation is to do what you have to do. How am I going to accomplish what I need to accomplish? That's not your problem. Your problem is you do what you have to do. You're right, you have to put in your effort. That's it. So when the spies come back, and they say, we can't conquer this land. They're too strong and so on and so forth. And, there are explanations. They felt they weren't worthy on a spiritual level to merit those miracles and so on and so forth. But the bottom line was this. Everything they saw and everything they reported was absolutely true. But they had one mistake. They had a mistake they made over here. And that's that they saw things through the eyes of how can we do this? We don't merit it. We cannot do it. We are not strong enough. And Kalev and Yeshua see the same exact thing. And they say, you're right. But it's not you. It's Hashem. You did your part. You spied the land. You saw what's going on. That's it. Just rely on Hashem. Build that ladder. And somehow you'll get to heaven. And you'll get there. And the Jewish people say, subscribe to the viewpoint of the 10 spies. And they say, we can't do it. It's too much. And they cry. And crying, this I discussed 8 years ago in this year over there, the term crying, bechia, is cognate with the word navuch, which means confused or lost. Like you say in the Megillus Esther, Va'ir Shushan Navocha, the city of Shushan was confused. Okay, when you cry, you cry out of a sense of confusion, of feeling lost. That you don't see a way forward, and that's why the Maral, I believe, says this. When you cry, when you're having a good cry, not like a couple of tears coming down, but not just like everyone had tears in their eyes. No, when you're having a good cry, you cannot see and you cannot talk. Okay, your modes of connection to the outside world shut down. You cannot see and you cannot talk. And so what?
Like the
kids.
They can't say what's going on because.
Right. Well, I'm saying they're just so overcome by emotion, they're crying and so on and so forth. Happens to adults occasionally also. Hopefully not just because you banged your knee or someone called you a name, but as I've often pointed out, adults are just kids. I should say adults. Many adults are just kids who have gotten better at hiding it. Kids can be very cruel. So can adults. They just shake your, they just smile and stab you in the back instead, instead of stabbing you right to your face. So again, I've encountered adults like that. I'm sure you have also. So in any event, this is what's happening over here. The Jewish people have this opportunity to reunite with the Torah, to identify and reunite with Hashem at that level of oneness with Torah, of oneness of engraving on themselves through Eretz Yisrael, if they're able to connect to Hashem at that level of seeing that ultimately everything is Hashem. But instead they go in and they just see the natural chain of events. Naturally, you can't conquer the land. You're absolutely right. But what's natural? Build the ladder. But we have to get to heaven. You're right. But build that ladder and somehow Hashem will get you to heaven. You do your part. And they fail. So Hashem says, this is the final step in the process from the golden calf. Because in the golden calf, you moved away from that dynamic. But you had the opportunity to reclaim it and to rebuild it by going into Eretz Yisrael and re-identifying what's truth and what's fake, what's Hashem, and what's just me and my world that I'm stuck in. You had that opportunity. Again, much like Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden and subsequent generations. I want to just how far this goes, by the way. I will take it to Noah for a moment. But if you look at the last verses of Parshas Bereishis, so Hashem says that he's going to destroy mankind. Bishegam hu basar, in as much as he is flesh. There's a lot of discussion what that verse means. But the letters Bishegam, the Gemara points out, is the numerical value of the name Moshe. Okay, Shegam. Shegam is, I'm sorry, Bishegam is Moshe. Because you're missing the hey, you have a gimel and a base instead of five, is Moshe. And sources say that that generation of the flood had so much bracha, had so much goodness in their lives from Hashem, that Hashem gave it to them because they could have been the generation that received the Torah. Now, exactly what that would have looked like, receiving the Torah, but the point is, what does it mean, receiving the Torah? Well, the other tree in Garden of Eden is Eitz HaChaim. You know what Eitz HaChaim is? Eitz HaChaim, the tree of life. So, if you go into many shuls across the world, you'll see on the urn, it says, Eitz HaChaim hi la machazikim bo, the tree of life, for those who grasp it. Right? Adam HaRishon had that tree of life in Gan Eden, but he messed up. He moved away from it. He ate from the Eitz HaDas. The Dor HaMabul had the opportunity to engage in the world around them with all the goodness they had in that world, and to use it in a way to identify Hashem and to push the ra, the evil, aside and to grasp the good. They did quite the opposite. They opened the door for the evil, so much so that it just overtook everything and destroyed the whole world, and the good was left behind. Okay, but Moshe, that idea, what's Moshe? Moshe is the one who brings the Torah from heaven down to earth, who reunites and reconnects, so to speak, heaven and earth. Moshe Shapiro makes his point. Eretz Yisrael is the point where Yerushalayim, based on Mikdash, heaven and earth kiss, meet. It's that connection, that absolute connection between heaven and earth, that reunification of the world that's away, reconnecting. Where is the ultimate point of connection? Based on Mikdash, Aron. The Kodesh HaKadoshim is beyond the confines of the physical world. The Aron doesn't take up any space. All the merit, you know, the Aron does not take up space. Nice trick, God. You made, you know, a place in the world that's above space. Very nice. Why? Because it's not really quite part of this world. Okay? The Kodesh HaKadoshim is kind of part of this world and kind of part of the next world. So the normal rules of space and time don't apply. All the miracles that took place in the Beis HaMikdash, there's a list in Pirkei Avos of all the miracles. You know, no flies buzz around the meat, and the smoke went straight up, and the rain didn't put it out. Again, sounds like a lot of nice tricks, either that or just Hashem, you know, doing easy housekeeping for the Beis HaMikdash. Is that all it is? So the Maral says no. The point is that these are defects in the natural world, which when you're not really quite part of the natural world, they don't exist. Okay? The Beis HaMikdash is referred to as the neck. What the neck does? It connects the head with the rest of the body. If you want to, I'm not encouraging it, but if you want to kill someone, what do? You break their neck, right? Because if there's no connection between head and the rest of the body, so then everything falls apart. Okay? There's the neck is the point of connection. The Beis HaMikdash is that point of connection. And the Torah is there, and Eretz Yisrael is that connection between heaven and earth, and the Jewish people have to go in and make that connection and recognize that the earth is really just secondary to heaven, to Hashem, and all the miraglim have to do is come back and recognize that. But only two of them make that recognition, the rest of them fail. And Hashem says, you broke the connection with the Chet HaEgel, and you had a chance to reconnect it, and now you failed. That's it. We're done. It's not just like one sin too many. It's that the process that began with the Chet HaEgel, that moving away from Hashem, now culminates and finishes with the sin of the spies, with the chet hamaraglim. Okay, and that's where it ends. And so when we go through, I have way too much time left. Okay, when we go through these weeks, these 3 weeks, we're going really through a process of moving from chet ha'egel, which is the beginning of the process of moving away from Hashem, to the culmination of that process that ends with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the loss of Eretz Yisrael, is the loss of that place of opportunity that we have to reconnect between ourselves and Hashem. So how does that play out practically? What does it mean for us during these weeks? So I think on a very basic level, the answer is that in our lives, we all have opportunities, situations, either on a micro level, on a macro level, where you look at your life and you say, what am I going to do? How am I dealing with this? Whatever it is, parnasa, kids, illness, everything. You look at the world at large. What am I going to do? Inflation, oil prices, Russia, Ukraine, Israel. The list goes on and on. It's 105 degrees outside every day, and I'm not even in Phoenix. You know, like what is happening over here? You know, I always love it when everyone walks around like the world is falling apart. Uh-huh. You must have lived through World War II when everything was just like fine and hunky dory. There's a pandemic. Uh-huh. And so therefore the world is falling apart because no one in the history of the world ever died from disease. Like when 1/3 of Europe, you know, was killed out 700 years ago because of the Black Plague. So, you know, all in all, we're in pretty good shape, thank God. But every point in life has its challenges. And there are situations, again, whether on a micro-personal level or on a more general level, where people get worried and they get nervous and they panic. And that panic usually stems from a place of feeling I'm not in control of this. What am I going to do? I have no way to control this. I'm not in control of it. If I'm in control, I feel calm. When I'm not in control, that's when I start panicking. Did you do your shtadlus? Did you figure out what you need to do and then do it? Then that's it. You built your ladder. You built your ladder. But I have to get to heaven. You're right. You're right. So that's Hashem's problem. That is Hashem's problem. The story is often told of the Brisker Rav, Rabbi Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, who fled during World War II. He managed to flee from Vilna and make his way out of Europe and emigrate to the land of Israel. He only made it out with about half of his family. His wife and a number of his children were left behind, and they were murdered in Brisk. But he was in Warsaw, and the Nazis were bombing Warsaw. And those who were, you know the life of the Brisker Rav, his reputation was as a nervous type of personality. It expressed itself, you know, in mostly in areas of halacha and Yiras Shamayim. In other words, that was his personality. He was a more intense personality, and it channeled and expressed itself through his performance of mitzvahs and serving Hashem and so on and so forth. And the proof in the pudding that this was how he channeled it was as follows: during the period of where the Nazis were bombing Warsaw, so in between the bombing raids, he was running back and forth. He was pacing. He was thinking. He was trying to figure out this and that, and he was just very nervous, very tense, and constantly thinking and examining and searching and researching, trying to figure out what they should do, where they should go, what's the best route, what's the best thing, and so on and so forth. When the bombing was going on, he sat in his corner serenely learning. So someone asked him, between bombing raids, you're nervous, you're uptight, you're running around, you're thinking, you're researching that. But while the bombs are falling around and everyone's screaming and praying and worried they're gonna die any moment, you're just sitting there in your corner learning. He said as follows. He said, while the bombs are falling, there's nothing I can do. I can't go outside. There's nothing to do, nowhere to go. I'm putter. I'm exempt. There's nothing for me to do. So I sit and I learn. In between, when it's safe to go outside to research, to figure out what's happening, where should we go? Should we stay? Should we go? Should we run here? Should we go there? So then I have an obligation to figure out the best path forward. So I'm understandably nervous and tense to ascertain what our obligation is, what we should do next. But while the bombs are falling, I can't do any of that. I'm done. It's God's problem. It's not mine. All right? So that story illustrates the idea that while he did have a side of him that expressed intensity and, you know, perhaps you might say nervousness, whatever it is, it was channeled and it was controlled in a way that, what is my obligation? What does Hashem want from me? And that's it. I did my part, and I don't have to do anything else. And I'm done. Okay? And so when we move through these weeks, the obligation, one of the elements that we have to think about over here, moving from Shavuos V'Tammuz towards Tisha B'Av, One element to think about is that we need to be able to see in the mess, through the mess, we need to identify that as much as we live in a world where we perceive ourselves and our own efforts and so on and so forth, we need to recognize that ultimately, once we've done our part, it's Hashem who is ultimately in charge of everything. And it's not, it's easy, it's very easy to say it. Very easy to say it. I say it all the time. Okay? Easy to talk the talk. But walking the walk is a whole different ballgame. You know, if I decide that I have to go and make a living, and, you know, I could fudge the numbers a little bit on the books and I'll save, you know, I'll make a lot of money that way. Or, you know, I could do something that's maybe halachically questionable. No, but listen, I have to make a living. I got kids to marry off. I have tuitions to pay. I have lots of tzedakas I have to give money to. I have names I got to put on buildings, whatever it is. So I, you know, it's you know, if I, I'm not really cheating or lying. It's just a little, you know, whatever. And I probably won't get caught and end up in jail by the Yomi Shiron over there. So what's the problem? Well, let's see. Is this your obligation of Ishtadlus? Is this your ladder? Or have you reached the top of your ladder? And now Hashem says, okay, you reached the top of your ladder. Thank you very much. And don't do this because it's not the right thing to do. So when that temptation looms, that's when the situation becomes critical. It's easy for us to sit in our armchairs on Monday morning and talk about how small-minded the Jewish people were at that juncture, but they were a lot greater than us. They were, in a certain sense, the greatest group of people that ever walked the earth. Their awareness of Hashem, and they made this mistake. So far be it from us to say we would not have made the same mistake, because most people make that same mistake all the time. And even though we pay lip service to it, but to actually live it, to actually identify that this is, Hashem is going to take care of it, and I have nothing to worry about. I don't have to cry, or I don't have to panic, or I don't have to be worried at all of anything of that sort, is a tall order. But it's something to think about and work on. And these 3 weeks, it's an element that we can work on in rectifying. Golden calf is moving away from Hashem. The opportunity that was missed by the sin of the golden calf is to recreate that intense oneness, and it was lost because the Jews got stuck in the weeds of the world around them. To be able to cut away those weeds and see what truth really is something we can work on during these weeks. Okay, we'll stop here. And I think this is the first time in history I ever finished early, so we should make a shachiyona just for that. If there are any questions, I'm happy to take them. Yes.
How do you answer, why couldn't they have just waited a little, like a few more hours?
Yeah. a few more hours.
By the Chag HaEgel, why couldn't they just say, let's give it one more day? What was the urgency that they have to go and I mean, I understand like the Erev Rav or in Syria, that was the Erev Rav, but they're there.
So it's a good question. I've had this question. I think the answer is that, let me put it to you this way. Imagine you are a little three-year-old child. Imagine you're a little three-year-old child, and you're in this gigantic park, and you can't find your parents. But you're like, let me wait half an hour or an hour before I start crying because I'm missing my parents. Or do you immediately panic because your entire world revolves around the parents who's taking care of you and whom you have a relationship with, right? So you have to understand that the Jewish people in the desert,
but that's
precisely it. Every moment that they did not have that connection was a moment of agony for them. They had to have that connection with Hashem. Their entire life, keep in mind, this was part and parcel of themselves. Okay, I'll go Twilight Zone here for a minute, and you know, imagine if you looked at your hand and like, you know, your fingers were just not there. God forbid, like they just disappeared. Right, and they're not there anymore. So you're gonna be like, let me wait half an hour and see if they pop back up, you know, by the end of the episode or not. Or do you immediately panic because a piece of you is missing? Right. Remember, the Jewish people by this moment were, you know, they were living together with Hashem. That was the intensity, and Moshe is their connection. As far as they know, Moshe is dead. That means, as long as he's alive and he's up in heaven, everything's good. We have that connection. Moshe's gone. We are alone in the middle of the desert. Forget about the physical side of things. The mun still fell.
Right.
It's been pointed out that like they made the eagle, they went to sleep, they woke up the next morning, the mun was still there by their doors. Okay? But a piece of them is gone. A very important piece of themselves is not here. So you're going to wait a while, or you're going to immediately try to rectify that problem. Okay? So I think that's maybe the beginning of an answer. I have not actually seen anything written up on it, but that's, you know, that's my understanding of the situation as far as that goes.
Because there were some people who were like,
Oh, Aaron tried his utmost to delay them. The women,
we do.
Yes.
Also, though, doesn't that also have a correlation with the Garden of Eden, though? Because wasn't it only like 3 hours until Shabbat?
Yes, it was. They did not have far to go.
Yeah.
Correct. So over there, it's a little different. Over there, and again, it's similar to here, you have a choice. Either you sit tight, or you look at this world and say, dear Lord, did you really just put me here to sit tight and do nothing? That's the purpose of my existence? I've got all these powers and all these abilities to choose between good and evil, and I'm not supposed to use it at all, ever, and I might get to Shabbos, but when I get to Shabbos, like, you know, time's up, game over, and I haven't done anything. So, the sources already say, I believe the Gemara makes this point, that Adam and Chava eating from the tree was actually not there lishma. It was not there for the sake of heaven. Adam only had the right reasons in mind. He wanted to create a greater challenge for himself to overcome. And he thought this is really what Hashem wanted. Okay? And by the way, if you want another connection over here, Akedas Yitzchak is where someone succeeded. Hashem told Avram, you're going to create a great nation. Yitzchak will be the one who's going to carry it on. You're going to bring me into the world. You're going to found a nation that's going to bring the world back to where it's supposed to be. Right? So this is the whole future of the world at stake. And then God comes and says, I want you to throw everything you spent your entire life building out the window. Forget about your life's work, everything you've done for me, out the window, gone. And in fact, there's a connection that the reason why Hashem spared the Jewish people, Kabbalistically, there's a connection between the Chet HaMeragim, the sin of the spies, and the Akedah. Because in the Akedah, in Avram's mind, this makes no sense. L'daito, to his mind, makes absolutely no sense. And Hashem says, okay, but you put in your effort, and you try to figure it out, and it doesn't make sense. Good. Now do what I, now listen to me, because, you know, Avram has to choose between what makes sense to me versus, you know, what Hashem has said, even though it makes absolutely no sense. And he has to make that choice. So there Avram succeeds. There he succeeds. There's a lot to talk about, you know, with that Akedah as well. That's not our discussion for now, but it ties in there as well. And there's a connection between the Akedah and Chet HaMeragim, and in terms of the Akedah, it offers a measure of, we'll say, of schus or atonement for the Chet HaMeragim to preserve the Jewish people, because they still had a connection to that Akedah, to that schus of the Akedah, which we always hark back to as well. Okay, it's that moment of Avram creating a world that is nothing but Hashem, despite the fact that it seems impossible. Okay? All right.
I should have gone for it.
Well, that's why we're here.
Totally.
I should have totally gone for it. At the end of the day, you can't completely lean on your forefathers for everything. You've got to achieve on your own. And so, in as much as the Jewish people had a connection to Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, as Moshe keeps invoking, remember Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, right? Why? Because, in other words, we're tied back to that, so we still have that in our blood. We may not be living it right now, but we still have that. So we may have failed in that, but we still have that. So don't destroy us totally, but we still have that. Just okay, I won't destroy you totally, but this generation, they blew it. And the next generation is going to be the one that goes into Eretz Yisrael. Okay? But for them, really, it's the next generation, and they kind of have to start from scratch, and they're going to have their own challenge. Okay? All right. Thank you all for coming. Thank you all on Zoom for coming. I apologize about the video situation, and I should hopefully have a recording of this available. Yeah, it's recording. So I should have a recording of this available that I will be happy to send out. Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful evening. Next week, Monday night, will be class 2 on the Megillas Eicha and the Aleph Beis.